You're listening to You Would Think, the Philadelphia Flyers podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Collington. Joining me today, the one, the only, Mr. Kevin Durso. How are you, bud?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing all right. I'm on vacation this upcoming week, so I'm kind of chilling right
there
now.
There we go.
It's going to be a nice chill show. The Stanley Cup Finals have begun. The Dallas Stars are up 1-0. Take a shot if you had that one, guess. And we're going to talk about that as well as a little bit of Flyers news today. But before we do that, make sure to check out our socials. They're written on the board behind Kevin if you're watching on our YouTube channel. You can also find us on Twitter at YWTPodcast. Kevin is at Kevin_Durso. He's over at SportsTalkPHL as well as at FlyerDelphia. You can find the show at SportsTalkPhilly.com as well as all over social media.
Do we want to also plug the new platform we're on?
Oh, yeah. I guess we are on, what is it, Amazon?
We're on podcasts? Amazon Podcasts now.
We are on Amazon Podcasts, and we were a day one. We were a launch title for them. So Amazon Podcasts has launched, and you can find us there, too. This is not a sponsored segment, but, you know.
No, it just means that you can find
it into our plugs.
You can find it in, what now, 7 different places, I think.
Probably more than that. Podbean kind of sends it out everywhere.
Yeah, it's pretty efficient, I'll say that.
So just off the top of the news, this probably isn't going to be a very Flyers-centric show because there really wasn't a ton of news, but we will hit that Flyers news right off the top. The biggest thing, and really the only huge story we have, is Nicholas Obey-Kubel has signed his extension. 2 years, a hair over $1 million. It's kind of about what we called for on this show last week. What do you have to say about that? It's about what we thought, right?
I thought maybe even possibly less, quite honestly. Like, I thought he could even ask for more of a raise because he scored at such a good clip late in the year.
Probably.
And
I think the flat cap really pinched down on him.
Oh, yeah. I don't think it's at the flat. Yeah, the flat cap definitely had something to do with it.
If the cap goes up $2.5-3 million like it does in a normal season,
he might get one and a quarter.
He might have gotten 1.2, 1.3.
Yeah. I could see it, but I mean, bottom line is that I think that's exactly what Chuck Fletcher was talking about when he said you're making moves and you're thinking about them 2 to 3 years out. Here's a 2-year move where a guy's going to play probably, I'd say a top 9 role, like, or close to a top 9 role. Like, he could, he's going to play the bottom 6 mostly, but I'm saying this is a guy who could rise into
enough. I would hope that the team is good enough that Obey-Kubel is on kind of the third and fourth line.
Exactly.
For most of next season, for sure.
I'm saying that over the course of the 2 years, I think maybe by the end of the 2 years, he could be a third line winger at that point, as opposed to the fourth line.
For sure.
Like, especially if you see the scoring touch. That's the thing. Like, he is going to have scoring touch. He did say something about, and he was on it for a little. He did say something about playing power play time. He does have that ability. He's a good penalty killer. So I think you're going to see him play a lot.
Nicholas Obey-Kubel is a prime candidate to slide up the lineup once somebody goes to Seattle.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
God forbid the Flyers lose Scott Laughton, which I think is a possibility, by the way. I think there's a real chance Scott Laughton goes to Seattle. If that's the case, you know, Nicholas Obey-Kubel could easily slide up kind of into that Scott Laughton role.
I think your statement is going to be, you know, true or false depending on what happens next year. Like, if he has a really good 2020-21 season, whenever that happens, then I think that they'll protect him for that.
Like, and you're talking about Scott Laughton now.
Yes. Like, I think Laughton becomes the protected guy if he has another really outstanding year, kind of like he did, you know, on the level that he did this year, and maybe showcases it more in the playoffs. Like, this way, I think you absolutely
– Scott Laughton might force himself a protection spot.
You have to assume next year, whenever next year is, that based on what you just did this year, you have to assume that bare minimum, we don't even have to worry about the talk of them making the playoffs. Like,
we
it's got to be a given.
Knock on wood. You know, you would think that the Flyers will make the second round the year, you know, the year after making the second round, game 7 of the second round. Yeah,
you got to be there again.
A playoff team the next year easily, right?
Yeah, you've got to be in that round again without question.
And every NHL
steps forward.
Every NHL team talks about their window opening, their window closing. They're in their window. You know, we talk about the Washington Capitals probably having about 3 years left on their window. The Philadelphia Flyers window is opening. Mm-hmm. Right, your window is the last couple of years of Claude Giroux's contract, but then I'm looking at it as a bit of a longer window. I'm looking at those Ivan Provorov and Travis Konechny contracts. That's your window.
The bigger window. Yeah.
To me, that's your. I don't say this lightly. If the Philadelphia Flyers are going to ascend to the elite in the NHL, if they're going to be like Tampa or Boston or these teams that are always in the cup race, always blah, blah, blah. That 6-year period is your chance to do it. The Flyers have a chance to potentially have two parades in the next 6 years during these contracts. That's not unreasonable.
Those guys are all definitely the most important. I mean,
right.
Let's be honest, I don't even worry about the contracts as much as the ages of those players and depending on what they'll make. Like you got two of those guys are 20 or 23 years old. Provorov and Konechny are both there. Carter Hart's 22. You've got this whole group of defensemen that are all in that age range. I mean, how many guys, there's at least three defensemen who are under the age of 25. You know, Robert Hague is 25.
Right.
Dostis Bear is 27.
Once Matt Niskanen and Justin Braun clear out, it's going to be a very young defensive core.
Right. And we talked about this last week. I don't even care if you keep Matt Niskanen and just say it's less money and you put him in a reduced role. Like, you need those guys too. I mean,
if Matt Niskanen's on your third pair when you're deep in the playoffs, you're in pretty good shape.
Oh, sure. Exactly. Yeah. And from a forward standpoint, you know, it's not just Konechny at this point, but it's going to be when Joel Farabee really comes into his own.
Oh, I can't wait for
being
that.
That he's just 20 years old.
Yeah.
When Morgan Frost starts to break through, when Oscar Lindblom comes back at complete full strength and play, has a full camp and all of that. When, you know, if and when Nolan Patrick is able to return, you know, all of that type of stuff. But there's a lot of guys. Like, that's the thing. Like, if I mentioned Nolan Patrick fifth on that list, then that means you got a lot of other guys who are there and you don't have that question. You know, I mean, and then don't forget that you're working with Sean Couturier in his prime now.
Exactly.
You're working with Scott Laughton at 26, which is entering the prime years also. Like, that's where it's got to be.
For sure. And we're looking at that as kind of the window. And the Flyers window is just opening. So, like, there's a lot of people who are very upset when the Flyers went out in the second round. And I'm one of them. We mourned it on the show a little bit. But it's not the end of the world, guys. And for the first time in a very long time, the Flyers window is opening. When's the last time the Flyers had a window like this? Because you think about past GM regimes, Paul Holmgren, how often did the Flyers have a real wide open franchise homegrown window?
From 2006 to 2011, when the Richards Carter years.
Right. And then, how many cups did you get out of that?
None. One cup final appearance. Correct.
One cup final appearance.
They did get. I mean, they did get two conference final appearances out of it, which, and that's why that's the reason I'm willing to call it a window, because Richards Carter was the 2005-06 season. Here they come, new players, and they weren't even the showcase guys. Obviously, at that point, they were just new. By 2008, they were focal points of those teams, and by 2010, it was captain and.
I think an alternate.
I mean, Carter was an
Carter
alternate.
Carter Warren, yeah.
So, like,
maybe one day over this offseason, one show, we'll do a comparison of that window versus this window, and we'll compare the eras of recent Flyers history. But in the meantime, you know what this window has that window didn't have?
Carter Hart.
A goalie. Yep. And defense. Carter and Richards were the two biggest parts of that forward core. The first time around. Who was the best homegrown defenseman?
Right. Well, because most of the homegrown talent was at forward, because it wasn't just – it was Carter Richards. It was also
– Braden Coburn was there.
Braden Coburn wasn't really homegrown, though. They even traded for him.
I'm talking about guys who kind of came up through the system a little bit.
Yeah, I guess. I mean
– Andre Mazaros was a top pair defenseman for a couple years there.
That's not one – I mean, what are we going to call it? That when they traded – when they traded Peter Forsberg to Nashville and got Ryan Parent.
Oh my
God. And Ryan Parent was still a prospect at the time, so he technically was a homegrown defenseman. I mean, he barely cracked the lineup too, you know. So
who would you rather have as your top pair? Andre Mazaros and Braden Coburn, or Ivan Provorov and Travis Sanheim?
I mean, I take Provorov Sanheim, but here's the thing. I don't discount, you know, Coburn's been doing it for a lot of years now. I mean, Coburn has had a really good career.
Because I thought he was terrible when he was here. And then he went to Tampa Bay and was playing top pair minutes. And I don't know
because
he was playing with Victor Hedman. And Victor Hedman could make a garbage sack look like a good defensive partner. But either way, he went and had really a wonderful career in Tampa Bay. Like, Braden Coburn was a stalwart.
Yeah, he's had a good career all together. Yeah, and I mean – I would think also one of the things is that shelf life for a defenseman at his age, when you get traded to a contender like Tampa, that your shelf life is a lot less than what you would expect. Like, he got traded. It was all, what was it, 2015 he got traded?
I believe so, yeah.
It was right before their cup run that came just short. And it's like,
well, you thought it was going to be like a rental.
Right. Like, you almost thought it was going to be a rental, but then also, like, to sit here and say 5 years, 6 years later, he's still there. He's
still there.
You know, and still playing. Or still has a partner. I don't think he's playing because he hasn't played in the last few games.
No. But he was a part of that team all year, part of this team that won the President's Trophy a year and a half ago. You know what I mean? Like, he's part of this Tampa.
Well, look at who they've added. I mean, like Tampa Bay's defensive core is added, you know, between Shattenkirk and Zach Bogosian was a recent addition and things like they've brought in guys that have essentially pushed him out, but that was only over the last couple of years. And even last year, he was still playing when they went into the playoffs. Like, he was definitely still part of the picture then.
And I imagine, honestly, Tampa's the kind of organization, if they get up 3-1 in this series, they'll play him in game 5 just so we can get his name on the cup.
I could see it.
He's been there long enough. You know, you don't play him in game 7 if you need it. But, you know, if you're up 3-1 and you got a little bit of wiggle room, you pull Kimmo Tiimonen in Chicago, right? You let him get his game. You let him get his name on the cup. You let him, you know, possibly lift the thing. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that actually transitions us really nicely into the Stanley Cup final.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that's the Tampa Bay Lightning are playing the Dallas Stars.
That's always a fun conversation, too, is like looking at the last two teams. Well, now that we're down to the last two teams that are there.
Now it's time to start looking at orders.
But in trying to find that guy who you go after, like after Steven Stamkos, assuming he's the one who actually gets to hold it first because he hasn't played.
Oh, he'll be the one who holds it.
But I would imagine he would be, even if he just has to throw the pads in right. So after Steven Stamkos, after Jamie Benn, who gets it next? Like, who's the veteran guy that you sit there and you go, you should get it next? For Dallas, I think it's an easy choice.
It's got to be Joe Pavelski.
That was my thought. And in very short order, it's going to be Pavelski, Hudobin. Very short order because they're both – I mean, Pavelski's not a journeyman. Like, he played a lot of his career with San Jose, but it's the veteran years that he's put in to get it. And Hudobin's a journeyman. He's been all over the place. I mean – up in the NHL and in the minors. He's been all over the place.
There's a guy at the Athletic. I'm not sure who it is. It's either Dom Lecision or Down Goes Brown, who does the old guy without a cup rankings every year.
There we go. Okay.
Basically, it's an article, and I'll leave it up on the Athletic behind the paywall, blah, blah, blah. But it's an article of, hey, if your team is out, here are stories you can root for. Here are old guys without a cup who you can root for. And I believe Joe Pavelski was at or very near the top of that list. Either way, how much of that game did you catch last night? We're recording in our normal Sunday morning spot. And game one was last night where I think kind of surprisingly to a lot of people, the Dallas Stars came out and kind of ran the show and ended up winning that game 4-1.
Yeah, I mean, I pretty much watch any minute of it I can get. And I wasn't around to watch the very beginning of it because it was a little bit of an earlier start. It was 7:30, not 8 o'clock.
A little different,
Saturday. I like it better too, but you know, anyway.
Living on the West Coast and getting a 4:30 Saturday start would be sweet.
Yeah, that sounds pretty sweet.
So I
basically caught up on what I missed in the first period and then saw the rest of it. And I mean, there's two sides of this story. And the first one is that the goaltending was outstanding. I mean, Anton Hudobin continued to be exactly who he was the entire way through. And I'll write up every game on Sports Talk Philly on 97.3 during the Stanley Cup final because it's the last two teams left. You might as well put a little bit of national exposure out there for whatever. And the picture that I grabbed for it was Hudobin's save on Alex Killorn in the third period. I mean, yeah. The skate save right off the toe of the skate. And it's like, you know, wow, you know, like what a save. And I didn't realize it until I actually looked into the box score. Cause I don't think I actually looked at the box score like while I was watching or anything like that. 22 shots by Tampa Bay in the third period and they don't get a goal and that they needed a goal, obviously. And they had three power plays and you think that would be one.
Anton Hudobin has assembled Hudobin was the brick outstanding. Wall. He has assembled the brick wall. I don't know if I've seen a goalie this good in the playoffs since Jean-Sébastien Giguère.
Well, you know what? One of the things I did
– maybe Cam Ward in 06.
I previewed the series, and one of the things I do – and I did this – I've done this for the last couple of years is I basically take the two teams that make it and do three sections in this preview that I post before game one, which is how they got there, who are the Conn Smythe leaders at the moment or favorites, and what do they need to do to win the series, to win the cup.
Right.
And when doing the Conn Smythe – leaders, there was no question in my mind that right now, to me, Hudobin's the leader for Dallas. Yeah,
I do actually want to talk about some Conn Smythe possibilities as we move on. But yeah. Yeah, but he's definitely the number one in the clubhouse right now.
That, sure. To me, for sure. Yeah, I mean, Dallas has a handful that you could really pick from. I mean,
Dallas has some storylines going.
And we talked about it in our group chat a little bit, and I think we all came away with the same
three big names.
Well, away with the same two at the top, I think. Like, we really kind of centered on Hudobin's been outstanding, and everybody knows it. And then Miro Heiskanen has been
tremendous. Just done it from a production standpoint.
Production, yep. Defensive play, though, too. I mean, because this team doesn't give up goals. They don't give up goals.
And he has been phenomenal defensively as well as contributing offensively. Miro Heiskanen is really good. Yeah. He's really good.
He is really good. I mean, you know, it's funny because that
hey, could when be a, was when was he drafted?
Yeah, I know. Well, that I will say this. That will be a discussion for years. Not that one that you're referring to, but the other one, which is the guy who went third that year in the draft and the guy who went fourth that year in the draft, because both of them are going to, you know, at some point in time, and maybe this is a little bit of, I mean, let's just say we did get
Western Conference final.
Well, exactly. As I say, we did get this series in the second round.
It's
already
the same,
but McCarr, somewhere down the road,
McCarr
it's gotta be
isn't quite as developed. Heisenin's getting there, but McCarr, you know what, is just finishing up kind of his rookie year, right?
But
they
you
took
know
different
what?
Paths.
Yeah. But you know what? You saw that. Because McCarr had a terrible play behind the net where he turned it over and it gave, and it ended up being a game-winning goal because it came right back out in front, and Gurianov came in. There's another name that we threw into the discussion. Dennis Gurianov's been outstanding too.
Gurianov has to be in the running. The big three names we came up with were Hudobin, Heiskanen, and then you and I both had a dark horse of Joel Kiviranta.
I said it's a bit like, don't discount him as a long shot is the way that I kind of refer to it. Like,
I said it was, if he scores another game winner, he gets himself in the conversation.
Yeah, because, not quite a game winner yesterday, but.
No, but it's, I mean, you're right there. And he has shown an incredible ability to be there in the clutch.
Yeah. No, I will say this. In a 4-1 game, does it count as a game winner when, in my head, that goal happens and I go, game's over?
Yeah.
Because that's exactly the way I felt, because I couldn't believe that he had scored on that. And, you wait for the replay because I'm going, first glance, that looked soft. And then I watched it and I went, yep, that was soft. And it's in the last minute of the second period. That's
sounds
the backbreaker.
Familiar.
It's over.
Sorry, last minute goal in the second period that serves as a backbreaker. I don't.
Yeah, I know. It sounds an awful lot.
We've never had that happen before.
We've never had that happen, right?
Well, I mean, either way, Dallas is up 1-0.
Yeah, Kiviranta is an interesting one, and I mean, there's three other forwards that I feel like I can name for collective playoff performance that would be a better choice. Like, I think Jamie Benn's had an outstanding playoffs. I think that we talked about Gurianov already and how he's contributed and contributed in big ways. Like, you know, the 4-goal game comes in a clincher against Calgary. He scores the winner to get him to the cup final in the conference final in overtime. Yep. That's a huge goal. He's got a lot of goals in the playoffs anyway, which is another big thing. And then I think Pavelski too has been a guy who you got to put in the conversation because here's why, because it's not the amount of what he's doing, it's the timing. He scores a goal in the last minute of the final round robin game that gets it to overtime in a shootout. That's how they win to get the third seed. Could be a different story if they got the fourth seed.
The whole playoffs could be different, right? You're talking butterfly effect there. Yeah.
There was a game against Calgary where he scores with 12 seconds left to complete a hat trick, and that gets it to overtime, and Radulov scored in overtime to win it. I think that tied the series. I think it was game four, and they tied the series off of that. And that set the tone for the rest of the series, because then they win it in six.
Right. It's incredible to me that Pavelski's never won
a goals.
It's incredible to me that he's never won a cup, because he has always been a clutch performer.
Well, that goes back to this. That goes back to the discussions we've had. We did this when we did the best teams bracket all the way back in quarantine early on.
In the actual summer.
Yeah, in the actual summer when we should have been talking about all that other random stuff. But nonetheless, it's that San Jose thing. Like, that those teams were really good, but they just never seemed to get it done in the playoffs. Like, they basically, that one run that they had that got them to the cup final against Pittsburgh that one year was pretty much the shot, and that was it. You know, I mean, they didn't really make that run with this, with those guys. And I mean, think about it. Like, and I'm not trying to make him sound like a big contributor, but Justin Braun was part of those teams too. And now, like, they're breaking the, like, breaking the band up now. You know, like, it's over.
Yeah, they don't have
like,
much of a choice.
Right. Like, yeah, they don't have much of a choice anymore. You're breaking the whole band up because it wasn't just him. It was, you know, when Patrick Marleau gets traded away or signs off with another team and, you know, goes to Toronto, then Pittsburgh and all that type of stuff like that. They're going other places. They're trying to find a way to win.
Right. We talked about windows a little bit earlier in the show, and it's getting very apparent that San Jose has probably just missed theirs. Right, they had that time period where they had Pavelski, Thornton, Marleau up front, and you had Vlasic and Burns in the back, and Braun was back there too, and Martin Jones was playing well, and you had your chance.
Even now they've got good players in different spots. You know, like Evander Kane can have a really big game.
Martin Jones is not a consistent enough goaltender.
Well, that's been
they don't have a good enough backup. They've never been able to. The best chance they had was probably when Aaron Dell was there.
Yeah.
But other than that, they have always struggled to find a competent backup for Martin Jones. And now they don't have the money to, you know, so they're going to be stuck with, I think Martin Jones was like an 890 for large stretches of this season in terms of save percentage. Like, he was not good. You know, they were a very, very bad team, as evidenced by the fact that their pick went to the Ottawa Senators and it was top five.
Yeah.
Like,
that wasn't, yeah.
No, but after game one, Dallas is up 1-0. Mm-hmm. What did you see out of Tampa? Do you think they're done? Do you think they're fighting back here? Do you think they're, you know, how over is this series after Dallas goes up 1-0 on Saturday?
It's not even close to over. And I think, you know, like I mentioned, 22 shots in the third period, and you get that great goaltending performance now. I don't think it always – like, I'm not saying Hudobin's – like, he's been outstanding in the playoffs, and he's going to continue to be good to keep
Andre Vasilevskiy has also been spectacular.
Yeah, and this is the thing. That's the rare – like, not – I don't want to say rare off night, but you get beat by a couple. I mean, the one is – Joel Hanley scores from the slot. By the way, yeah, Joel Hanley.
Who?
You know, who? Yeah, exactly. Like, here comes these unsung heroes in the Stanley Cup final, right?
Joel Hanley is a made-up name. He sounds like he should be opening for John Cougar Mellencamp in 1986.
Yeah.
Hello. Before the John Cougar Mellencamp show tonight, please welcome the warm musical stylings of Joel Henley. Tell me I'm wrong. He opens for John Cougar Mellencamp. Yeah, he plays 30 minutes of bad folk rock, and we move on with our lives.
It's really
and
funny.
He has a goal in the Stanley Cup final. He scored the first goal of the 2020
career.
Stanley Cup final.
And it's the first goal of his career.
Yep. Like, and it's in insane. Yeah, Talk about the stories in Dallas. Like, right, they might not be the better team. They might not be the more blah, blah, blah. Like, Tampa probably has the resume and the blah, blah, blah. But Dallas has the stories, man.
But that just fuels the argument that, like,
Dallas has that Destiny's Team vibe.
Yep, exactly. I mean, if you go on Twitter and you browse and see what people think about this series, it's one side saying it's Tampa's year, it's their time, it's their cup to lose, and I don't doubt that to an extent. I just sit there and I look at Dallas and I go, that's, you know, let's put it this way. If you would have gotten Dallas and the Islanders, try picking which one feels more like the team of destiny that made it all work out in whatever way. Sure. You know, like, this is at least this feels like the David Goliath thing, where it's Tampa's been there, done that 5 years in a row, top team in the conference all the time.
This feels
and
a
here's
lot.
This little team that no one gave a shot.
Tampa Bay feels a lot like the 1980 Russians,
and Dallas
feels a lot like the 1980 Americans. Right?
We're not just saying that because of the fact that they have, you know, Sergachev and Kucherov.
Oh no,
and, you know, no. I mean, they do have a lot of Russians.
Vasilevskiy. Vasilevskiy and Yakov Trenin.
I mean, I like that. That's a good comparison.
That's where we're at, right? The Dallas Stars are the scrappy young, who do you play for? You know, I play for the Dallas Stars. Come on now. Tell me they're not.
But it is.
They got the new coach, right? Rick Bonus was not their coach all season. He only coached them for like 20 games before the playoffs.
It was a little more than that. He was almost half the year, but
okay. But it certainly didn't seem like
he was already behind the bench in an assistant role for a while.
I thought he was a year and a half. I thought he was in the room. I don't think he was on the bench. But either way, he was in the organization. He was around these players every day. He was around the team, and he stepped behind the bench. But either way, he wasn't running the show.
Right.
He steps in after not coaching for, 20 years? You know,
it'd been a while.
I don't know if you listen to 31 Thoughts, Elliot Friedman and Jeff Merrick's podcast, which I do highly recommend.
I try to sometimes. And I definitely, whenever they post the 31 Thoughts kind of like in a blog style, I always want to check it out.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of good information in there that you don't get from a lot of people. So
absolutely. And the podcast is absolutely worth it. And they were talking a lot about this series on the last show. And they were talking about Rick Bowness and how the fact that he wanted to get behind the bench and have another chance to win a cup. So the fact that he's getting that opportunity with the Dallas Stars this year is just another special thing that the Dallas Stars are going for him.
Well, and you can see it too. I mean, the way he celebrates these overtime winners and things like he's all in on this.
And most of the time when a team wins, you'll just see the coach, crumple up his little game paper and pump his fist, and maybe he'll shake the hand of his assistant. Rick Bowness is jumping up and down back there. He's the biggest fan in the arena.
Well, and let's put it this way: both teams got to the Stanley Cup Final with an overtime win.
Yep.
Gurianov scores for Dallas, and Rick Bowness almost jumped over the bench like that's how excited he was. And Anthony Cirelli scores for Tampa Bay. Doesn't even almost realize it in the beginning because it was kind of a weird goal.
It felt a little Patty Kane-ish. Yeah, we know.
And, well, I don't think it was that weird. At least he saw it go behind him and didn't know if it was in because he actually assumed it was in and then was like, wait a minute, did it go in?
Oh,
God.
Yeah.
But I think it was a little bit more clear cut because I know that I thought, at least I thought from the beginning they had scored. But John Cooper didn't even know it was in. So kind of just got this, grin,
we'll take it.
And then we're going to the final. Cool. You know, there was almost he had a much better reaction to five overtimes than he did, or not even five overtimes. There's another one where he had an even better reaction. I can't remember exactly which game it was, but there was it might have been one of the Boston games.
Yeah, I think it was when they beat Boston to move on. I think he was pretty fired up.
Either that or it might not even been a game winner. It might have been something like it. Well, no, I think it had to be a game winner, but there was one somewhere in there. I don't think it was one to win a series because I can't see it being it's weird to say I'm sure you could be that fired up to win a series, but at the same time you've got to shake the hand of the coach who just beat right after. I don't know if you're going that
I think John Cooper has I don't necessarily know if John Cooper's job was in jeopardy, but I think he was starting to get those questions of, can you win it? What's the problem? These are some of the best players in the world. What's the problem? And I think John Cooper was probably going to be the first potential solution, because you're not trading Kucherov, you're not trading Stamkos, you're not trading Vasilevskiy or Hedman. Your coach is probably your next one to go. So the fact that they're here, I think he's probably relieved more than anything.
Yeah, I don't discount that. And at some point in time, you've got to have the ability to stop talking about regular season achievements with them and focus and have something in the playoffs. I didn't realize it until I was putting together the preview for the Cup Final that from December 23rd to February 17th. Now think about that. It's a 2-month span of time. They had a record of 23-2-1. In 26 games, they had a 10-game winning streak, an 11-game winning streak, and a handful of others in between. Went 2-2-1.
One of those games was the 1-0 game against the Flyers, right?
That was the final game of the first winning streak, the 10-game winning streak.
The 10-gamer, yeah.
Then they beat the Flyers again during the 11-gamer, which I think, again, was number 10 of 11.
Yep, and no team in the league feels bad when they lose to Tampa Bay. When Tampa comes into your barn and knocks your doors off, you just go, yeah.
Well, no, not only
that's about right.
At the time the Flyers lost that game, the 10th straight that they had.
They were rolling. Nothing. They were playing really, really well.
No, but it was 1-0. The Flyers had just come off of a terrible road trip. You were looking for any positive. They beat Washington, which was nice. And then you go 1-0 against a team rolling like Tampa. It's pretty good, you know. And the goal was fluky.
We all said on this show, we went, yep, I'll take it. I don't love it, but I'm not complaining about it. It was really not right.
That was very much a we can skate with this team kind of feel, you know.
That's when I started feeling confident about my you know, the team, right? That's when, that's really the, that loss did more for me than a lot of the team's wins this season in terms of how I felt about them.
It helped that that
validated them.
Well, no, but it helped that that game was followed by the Marchand game and then was followed by the St. Louis overtime game. Like when you get that, those kind of games four in a row, beat Washington with a shorthanded goal, 1-0 loss to a rolling team like Tampa, come back and the shootout, you know, gaff in by Marchand, and then an overtime win against the defending cup champs.
Yeah, I think that was probably the biggest four-game stretch of the season.
Those four games are probably the biggest in terms of at least telling you this team was going to turn it around in some way.
That was probably the biggest four-game stretch of the season in terms of establishing this team as legitimate contenders. Because, you know, as we talked about earlier, the window is opening.
But back to the cup final, yeah, like how yeah. close it is to being over. It's not close to being over at all. And I think it, I mean, here's the thing. I tweeted out my prediction last night about half hour before the game started. Okay. And said that, and I've mentioned it on the show before, that growing up my favorite player in the league was Mike Modano. So Dallas Star connection. I've always had an affinity for this team.
I was always on the Colorado Avalanche side of that.
Colorado Avalanche too. And
I feel like they went back and forth every year in the playoffs.
Well, here's the thing too. Like think about this from a perspective like this though too. It was the easiest thing in the world for me to root for the Dallas Stars in 2000 when the Flyers got knocked out and the Devils are the team that are going to the final. And it was devastating when it was an overtime loss and the Devils win the cup and the Stars did not. And it's like, well, now they beat two teams that I really like and won a cup. Like, and of course I was like 8 years old. So like it sucked. Like now I kind of understand how good those Devils teams were or how many Hall of Famers they had, you know?
Yep.
And obviously how great Marty Brodeur was all throughout his career.
Incredible. Like, yep.
But so I've always had that affinity for the Stars in some way.
St. Louis Blue legend, Martin Brodeur.
So I even said, and I tweeted this, the heart says Dallas is going to win this series. I'd love to see it. I'm pulling for it. I want to see it happen.
That's my prediction, by the way.
And I think it's going to be great. Yep. I was definitely very close. Like, here's the thing. My technical
head versus heart. Where are you
my
going?
My head pick was Tampa Bay in seven because it is going to be a close series.
In seven. Wow. Okay. Yeah,
it is going to be a close series.
In your head, you still gave Dallas three games. Okay. That's a lot more than a lot of people gave them. I'm not questioning it. I'm just saying.
This is going to be a long series. This
a lot of people.
Six or seven.
Producer Mike, genius that he is, predicted Tampa in five. So as soon as Dallas wins game two, that one's over.
I don't know if Dallas is winning game two, but I do think Dallas has got.
They're going to win another game.
Dallas has got at least one more win in them. Yes,
absolutely.
Because for what you know, it's hard to stop a motivated team like they are. You know, I mean, and not to say that Tampa isn't either. It's just that Tampa kind of like it's like the team that expects to be there versus the team that has rolled throughout this and goes. Like, you know, the Stars posted the video, the locker room video after the game, and they have this, like, it. I don't even know what you want to call it. It's like a chain. It looks like the chain
every
link.
Every team
thing
has their little
well, this thing looks like it's a necklace that's made out of, like, chain links.
Yeah.
That has a Dallas Stars logo on, like, dangling from it. So it looks like a necklace like that.
The Flyers have done it in the past with the robe and the helmet and the other helmet.
So Hudobin got it after game five of the Vegas series, and they win and go to the cup final. So Hudobin passed it off to Joel Hanley, and Hanley's first career goal.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he turns around and says something about this usual great win, all that type of stuff, and then gives you the three more. And that's where they are. It's just they just keep counting it down. Like we're already here. We're already this far with it. Just three more. Let's get three more.
Yep. Every team, you'll hear stories about teams taking the game puck for their win and putting it in the little punch board.
Yeah.
The Dallas Stars have 13 of their 16 punch board slots filled.
Yeah.
They only have three more wins. They only have to win three of the next six games to win the Stanley Cup. And I wonder how their youth is helping them and how their youth is hurting them, right? Because we talked about the fact that they have these out of nowhere stories, right? Rick Bonus hasn't coached in forever, and Joel Kiviranta, who's that, and Joel Henley opening up for, you know, John Cougar Mellencamp. How much of that Are they in a good spot because they don't know that they should lose?
Kind of, actually, yeah.
They might not know that they shouldn't win this series. They might not know. They might not know how up against it they should be.
Yeah, I don't think that that's, you know, I don't think a team goes in thinking it exactly that way. But it's kind of. But you're right about that oblivious nature of it, though. Like that, I think you stop reading stuff. You stop looking at people's predictions. And look, I don't think that it's that outrageous to think that Dallas is here per se. I mean, I think it is when you look at the path of the season. I think at the beginning of the year, there were people who looked at that team and said, you know, maybe all you had
12 months ago.
Well, yeah, but did say at the back at the very beginning of this, of the regular season, that looked at the team on paper and went, maybe all you needed to do was add some of those veterans like Pavelski, like Corey Perry.
Pavelski was a huge shining there.
Yeah, and maybe but like that's what people thought. Like maybe that's all you needed. And not only that, but like at the beginning of the year it wasn't Anton Hudo, but it was
think about it before this year. Who was it? It was Sagan and Ben and Kasten Kryl.
Yeah, it was Sagan and Ben. Radulov and was kind of was a name that was dangling.
He was a solid B player, but he was the only secondary, you know, quote unquote secondary scoring they had. It was Jamie Benn, Tyler Sagan, and I guess Alexander Radulov, and that's it. And now you got a little more depth. You got Kiva Ranta stepping up. You got Roope Hintz in your middle six. You got, you know, your defensemen are really stepping up from an offensive standpoint with even Alexiak. Alexiak is producing offensively in these playoffs. I can't believe that. He has a breakaway goal in these playoffs with a nice move on it, too.
He's got a breakaway goal, but then even the one yesterday, he just kind of relatively untouched to get his own rebound like that. And, you know,
I don't know where Jamie Alexiak learned to stick handle, but he is not stick handling like a man who's 6'7", 260.
One of the clips I saw that was outstanding was that they on occasion, I haven't been able to sit down and actually watch these per se, but they do, they show clips from the Quest for the Cup thing that ESPN Plus is doing.
Okay.
And they've got the officials mic'd up throughout, and Wes McCauley is like just laughing about the fight. Like, he goes, you see, Oleksiak even scored on a break. He said, he's talking to the, and he's doing the Islander Tampa game. So it's not even the same game, but he's talking to, I think he might've been talking to either.
They're talking about highlights.
I think he was talking to like Ryan Pulak. Cause I think Pulak had a breakaway at one point in time too, in a game. And he goes, all the defensemen are getting breakaways. The big guy, Oleksiak, scoring a goal. Like how, look at that big guy going in and scoring on a breakaway. Like, and it's unlikely, but it's fun when it's unlikely. Like, that's what you watch the Stanley Cup playoffs for.
These playoffs have been absolutely phenomenal from a hockey entertainment perspective for the most part, minus the Islanders games. But these playoffs have had everything. We have had five overtime games. We have had massive blowouts. We have had one goal games. We have had how many games did Vegas double Dallas's shots last series?
It was a few.
At least a couple of them.
Yeah.
Who won that series? Dallas did.
In five.
That's fun, man. That is fun. We have seen some fun hockey. Boston got eliminated early. That's always fun.
Okay, like, good. I'm glad you went there.
Pittsburgh didn't even make the first round. That's always fun.
Yeah.
Come on, man.
Right.
Like, listen, do any of us want to be here? No. We would all much rather be having this conversation in June about the Stanley Cup Finals. But given where we're at and given what a great job the NHL has done, because, again, we are still, you know, X days into the bubble, still no positive tests. The NHL has done an absolutely fantastic job with all of the off-ice stuff, from what we hear, after they got their Wi-Fi issue figured out originally. there have been one or two little, you know, blip-type stuff, nothing big. The NHL has done a pretty good job behind the scenes.
Yeah.
And the players have absolutely come through with their end of the bargain and put a phenomenal product on the ice.
Well, I think at this point it's a foregone conclusion. Just might as well say it, the thing worked, because you got at most you have six games left and they're going to be completed in the next 10 days. And at most you're talking 10 days left, they're going to get there, obviously. Yep. I mean, if you got this far.
Right.
And I think it's impressive what they did too, because I know that there's people out there who are going to be a stickler for the back-to-backs that have happened in conference finals, and there's one in the Stanley Cup final between, you know, four and five.
Potentially you would have had game sevens, and yeah, I get it.
But like, well, here's the thing about that. you're in the same place all the time.
There's like, no
it's
travel.
Not the same. It's still not the same. And all they're trying to do is, like, now the idea is this has nothing to do with ticket sales or getting people into the building. It has strictly to do with television entertainment value. And what are you going to do if you're faced with an every other day thing, and at least one time, whether it was game one or game five, you're faced with competing with an entire day's worth of the NFL. Right. Then what are you going to do? You're not going to play that day, and you're going to find a way to compete with either no NFL games on a Saturday or one on a Monday.
Right.
And that's what they did. They spaced it apart. So this way you get a Friday, Saturday back to back. And that, guess what? It'll be fun. It's going to be good hockey. It's going to be. It's just the way it is.
It absolutely will be.
And I thought it was really impressive. One of the things I pointed out when the schedule came out was, is that they had it mapped out that, okay, so everything started yesterday with game one. It's September 19th. And then from September 19th, if it goes seven, then it ends on September 30th. And literally, you started the qualifiers of the round robin on August 1st, and you're going to end it on September 30th. It's an exact 2-month
front to back 2 months.
That not only did you play the four rounds of the playoffs in that time,
you got an extra round.
Where that took 10 days on top of it. So you played the entire playoffs in,
and everyone had to come in 4 days early and get tested.
Yeah.
Everybody had to pass their four tests in 4 days and their blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, you did all that in 2 months. You know, kudos to you for doing
an incredible job.
And kudos to the NHL for giving us exactly what they told us they were going to give us, in the sense that it was, for at least at the very beginning, an entertainment value that made it feel like a tournament, like an all day.
How amazing. How amazing were those first 2 weeks where we're seeing four or
five a day? Yeah.
A day. It was a disappointment when series started ending, because we were only getting three games a day. Oh no, whatever will we do?
Right. There was a positive negative to it, because the positive of it was the fewer teams that continue to hang
better
around.
Not only that, but it was the
further along you get, then the more likely you are to complete without a problem.
Right.
Like, that was obviously the thought.
Right. As soon as teams start leaving the bubble, you know, but theoretically your exposure rates go down.
But I think as soon as the first round was over, like, as soon as the first round was over and you were down to eight teams left
you
in the
were
second
pretty
round,
out of the woods.
No, not even that. Once you had enough weeks to see that it was working, you go, just give us all the long series at this point. Like, can we play as many games as possible? Max it out. Like, it's why it was great that the second round had three series that went seven games, because that's what you wanted. Like, you wanted as many to go seven as possible.
And they were all 3-1 too. So you got, like, dramatic comebacks and big game sixes in all those series.
I mean, you nearly had that in a lot of them though. I mean, like, even, you know,
and in the Flyers series, games five and six went to overtime, six going to double. Like, there was a ton of extra hockey this
there was a ton of extra hockey. You got a lot of it, and it was cool to do. Like, there was something that was really cool about it, from, you know, to start at noon and finish it like 1 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, it was pretty great. Being able to do the March Madness thing.
Yeah, it's very March Madness in, you know, in August and September. But
right, instead of the first weekend in March, you know, you had the second weekend in August, basically, just turned into, here's hockey all day, and oh, by the way, it's every day for 2 weeks.
So we've talked about the obviously we talked about game one of the Stanley Cup final, and we talked about Dallas for a little while. We didn't really talk about, like, we talked a little bit about Tampa, but we didn't really talk about the wrap of the other series, because of the fact that, like, when we did the show last week, we still didn't know who was going to be there.
We actually
recorded before game four, and that was an interesting dynamic, because of the fact that you were sitting there ready to go with the 3-1 lead. I said, nope, this is going to be a 2-2 series. I was wrong about that. And then I somehow was still almost right about it going seven somehow.
You're right. The Islanders, I think the magic finally ran out for them, right? Like, we talk about the fact that their system is what got them here and their plan. And I think at a certain point, Tampa's just too skilled. And that's kind of what won out here.
I think there are two things. Tampa is too skilled. That's a fair point. I think the other thing about it is that, and it's an interesting way to look at it when you look at where the Flyers were. I think the Flyers were not experienced enough in the playoffs to be where they need to be, that team, and to do it three games in a row. Let's say it that way too.
That's fair,
Because here's the thing.
And we can see that in the Flyers in game seven. They were gassed.
Because the reason I say it is because I watched the Islanders play, you know, in game six, and in game six, watched Barzal try on a power play to enter the zone three times and make a pass, kind of almost force it and have it go off of his skate and go out, and they never get set up. And that, right, to me looked like a team that knew how to defend the entry so much better than the Flyers were going to be able to, because everybody felt like they had to press just to score. Tampa, I don't think, felt that way. Like, they knew that they had a way to score on them with various different points of production.
For sure, yeah.
And in doing that...
And that's something we've talked about. I'm curious if the Flyers had a 30-40 goal scorer, I'm curious if they might have maybe felt a little more comfortable and maybe not pressed quite as much.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. It's really tough to say. Like, you know... The Islanders had everything, like, going into that series. I think they, you know, we came to figure out they had the coaching edge. The goaltending was kind of almost even.
I'm willing to call that even.
Because of the fact that it was Carter Hart was really good, but he was not as experienced. Varlamov was having a good playoff, probably one of the best
he's
Islanders ever had.
And the Islanders' defensive system is
phenomenal. They were giving you a defensive system. I definitely think that the Islanders were better defensive structured than the Flyers were, and I say that meaning – you know, Provorov was going to be really good, and we knew that. But then as soon as the Sanheim-Myers pairing wasn't really good, and whether it was one guy's bad and one guy's doing okay, or they're both awful. Right. Like, as soon as that happened, and the fact that the Islanders were able to come at you with not only Pelech, Pulock, but go further down the list, and it's Mayfield, Mayfield, Taves, or, like, keep going down the list. Like, and then Leddy was with Andy Green, and even that pairing was good.
Andy Green torched the Flyers.
And then he had a decent – all things considered, he had a decent series against Tampa. You know, yeah. I mean, like, he wasn't a liability for them. I wouldn't say that. You know, I didn't really find any defenseman who was. I think actually what really let them down was probably their forwards, you know, to an extent. Like, Brock Nelson was excellent. I even tweeted that during Game 6. I said, I sure hope people are realizing, like, have an appreciation for this guy because he's been excellent in the playoffs.
If the Islanders had beaten Tampa, I think we'd be talking about Brock Nelson – in the Conn Smythe conversation, kind of in a similar way we've talked about, maybe not Miro Heiskanen, maybe a guy like Jamie Benn.
Yeah, probably. I mean, I'm trying to think of who the Islanders would have, like, who would have even been their guy, quite honestly, because
I honestly have no idea.
Because quite, like, as I'm watching that series, Barzal wasn't doing it for me.
No.
You know, he was good against, really good against the Flyers. I'm not going to take that away from him, but yeah. I think that Tampa focused right in on him and neutralized him from the beginning. You know, the line that was more effective for the Islanders throughout that was Nelson's line with Josh Bailey was on that line. I'm trying to remember who else. I think Pavelier might have been the other guy on the line.
Okay, it wasn't Anders Lee. Okay.
No, Anders Lee was with Eberle and with Barzal while. And I thought that all three of them, for the most part, I mean, it took in game five when they forced game six, it took a 2-on-1 with two of those guys to finally get the transition play that they needed to make a skill play to actually win a game. Right. Otherwise, they probably weren't winning that game without the transition play. And I think that that actually was what was going to happen in game six. Like, that's what it was going to take for the Islanders to win. They needed the play where here's the screw up, the turnover, the whatever, the broken play that affects Tampa. And if there's no broken play, then the Islanders aren't going to win the game.
Well, and I think that's why Tampa won that series. I think you can copy paste that sentence for every game. Mm-hmm. The Islanders' game plan is to play tight defensively, force you to make mistakes, and then take advantage of them. The problem is Tampa doesn't make mistakes.
Right.
Essentially. It's more nuanced than that, but that's the long story short of it, is that Tampa just doesn't make enough mistakes for the Islanders to win. And even when they do make mistakes, okay, now you still have to score on Andrei Vasilevskiy. Good luck. True.
And I think that the Islanders, what was disappointing, and this is why I said something about game four, like the way I did last week, was the way they had played game three, to me, fit the style so much more. And I'm like, well, now they showed they can actually play that style against Tampa. So maybe if they, you know, like if they bring that in game four and you even the series up like that, then I think you're in Tampa's head at that point. Like, yeah. Instead, it turned out to be the total opposite. And it was Tampa played their game in game four. And then in game five, it took the mistake to even get it to six. But that, you know, I still had those thoughts of that, like that thought of the momentum shifting at some point, like not momentum, but like, you know, when you win a game in overtime, step closer, it's now 3-2. It was 3-1, now it's 3-2. Win one more and it's a game seven, and they've been there before, you know, all that type of stuff. And I wouldn't have been shocked if it got to seven and Tampa had won, but it's just a fact of the matter, you know, like, because right. Really the game that really does the whole thing, I mean, there's two of them that really do, I guess. It's games one and two, because game one, it's the unfortunate nature that the Islanders had just played in two extra games that they didn't think they had to play in,
right?
and didn't get the benefit of playing a series that went five games in the second round. That's the first part. And to me, the whole series comes down to the last minute of game two. Because if they don't lose game two, they were actually the team that looked more poised to win. And instead of being the team that was waiting for Tampa to screw up in some way, they were the team that screwed up and gave Tampa the win. But they were the team pushing, and they would have, I think they would have carried that into overtime. They would have found a way to win that game. And it's a 1-1 series.
Who knows at that point, right? Then you're playing a best of five.
And now, see, imagine if they win that game and it's 1-1, and then you play the game three that you did, and it's 2-1, and the Islanders are leading the series. Right. Now the pressure's on Tampa, and now they're probably sitting there thinking Columbus all over again, right? Like, they're kind of like, it's something in their heads like, whoa, what kind of team is this? Right. We didn't expect this, you know, and now you're trying, and it's the first time that you're going to sit there and make adjustments. Like, and I did like John Cooper's answer when they said something like, you haven't faced adversity. And he goes, well, what's five overtimes? What's, you know, a few different other OT games, you know?
Right.
Like, what's coming back in different games, like, throughout the,
and,
you know?
And, you know, we talked about the Flyers kind of not being super active in free agency and kind of looking the same for the next couple of years. That's kind of what Tampa Bay has done. They haven't really added a ton. They've kind of been the same group, more or less, for the last couple of years. So this is the team that blew the 3-0 lead to Columbus and then ended up getting swept. Like,
right.
This team has faced adversity.
Yeah, well, they've faced adversity, but like, here's the thing about that statement and the difference between the Flyers and the Lightning.
Yeah,
when you have Kucherov and you have, well, because I don't even want to say like when you have Hedman, because to me, like, Victor Hedman is where he is right now, and I think that's great, but Ivan Provorov is rising to that, and I think can be, like, we've seen Provorov at least showed he can be that. I don't know that Konechny showed that he can be Kucherov, you know, like, that's what I'm saying. Like,
no, need, I wasn't drawing that comparison. I just,
oh, I, no, I'm not saying you weren't. Oh, no, I'm not saying
the same
you weren't.
Year over year.
Yeah, no, I understand that. I'm okay. Not saying there was a comparison. What I'm saying is that that's still the piece that they need, that you sit there and then you go, if all you do at the deadline is add Zach Bogosian, then okay, all you do is add Zach Bogosian. It's kind of like the deadline this year in a way. Like, if you had that piece and then said, you know, the best thing that we can do right now for the team to try to help us to win immediately is, let's go out and get veterans who have been there before. So let's go and get Derek Grant and Nate Thompson and sit back and say, that's it. That's all we're doing. And they might not play every single game, by the way. It's just a matter of having them there.
Yep.
And that's all you have to do. But that works out better when you know you have, like, instead of going out and getting the scorer.
Right. One thing,
which,
I
by
did,
the way, we should point out that crazy trade that happened in the league this week too.
Oh yeah, we'll get into that in a second. I do want to keep talking about the Cup final for just a second.
Yeah, let's
here.
Wrap that too.
One thing I do like about this series, from having seen, you know, game one, you hear a lot about rivalries in the playoffs, mm-hmm. and how by the time you get to the Stanley Cup final, both teams are kind of just beat up and they're in opposite conferences, so they don't really know each other. And Stanley Cup finals tend to be, they're intense, but there's not normally a ton of hate. Mm-hmm. Right? There's intensity, but there's normally not rivalry. There's not bad blood. There's not dislike. And we've seen some of that in game one, right? We saw Patrick Maroon get kicked out of the game. We saw some scrums and some, and both teams have willing participants, you know, and if Jamie Oleksiak and Pat Maroon want to scrap in the Stanley Cup Finals, I'm all about it. I think this has potential to be a really, really good series, just because, unlike a lot of other Stanley Cup finals in the past, this one has a little bad blood to it, and I like that a lot.
Well, I think it's because you've got two teams that have a bit of a physical element to their game. You know, this isn't just two teams with a lot of skill.
Montreal's not involved here, right? Like, these aren't high-flying, go-go-go type teams.
But even teams, you know, in years past, like, if we go back to a few of the other series, you know, like, I don't feel like that was St. Louis-Boston, per se. I mean, St. Louis had a couple guys like that, but not many, you know.
Right.
And I think even before that, you know, Washington playing Vegas. Vegas definitely didn't really have those types of guys.
Not,
you know,
then. It's funny. They'd be much more well equipped now.
But in that particular series, it wasn't really that style at all. It was going to be skill and.
Yeah, you still. You know what?
Even Washington, though, even for Washington, who had guys who you knew brought a physical edge, those guys were contributing offensively, actually. Like, right.
I'm thinking about it last year, and you did have some rivalry there. There was that the big Torrey Krug hit where he skates down without a helmet, blah, blah, blah. You know, there was that physicality there.
Yeah, which by the way, would be a penalty this year.
I know. Well, that's why they changed the rule. The year before that, you did have Tom Wilson and Ryan Reeves jawing back and forth through the whole final. That was one of the bigger storylines.
And basically, that you just nailed it. Like, those are the guys that come to mind when you think of the physical edge of it.
But this one might be a little more. This one might be a little more substantial. You know, previous years we've had that one. You know, one rivalry, one back and forth. This one. Dallas has a lot of heavy bodies. Tampa has a lot of heavy bodies.
Yeah, Dallas is that time.
Both teams have a bottom six that'll drag down into the muck.
Again, and I think that, you know, like, I think that we need a series like this to an extent. I mean, like, I know people are going to look at it and go, here we go again, like, with another one of these series where it's two markets that don't exactly draw that well. Like, it's not – like, I get it. It's not –
You mean you didn't see the picture of the socially distant watch party from American Airlines Arena where people were jumping up and down and hugging each other? You didn't see that?
I assume they were family. I don't know. I mean, let's do it this way. We can talk about how there's fights in NFL stands too, you know, that doesn't breed social distance either, but whatever. And nonetheless, like, I know everybody wants to see, like, first of all, everybody wants to see, not everybody, but like with the league would love is obviously to get a Canadian team in a final again.
Right.
I know.
The league, but the not league, only that, every but single not, year, the league wants Toronto versus New York, even though they both play in the East,
but it's not like, and
Toronto
and, like,
versus Chicago,
like even though the LA Kings hadn't won a cup for the longest time up until those 2 years when they were obviously really good and built it out the right way and things like that. When you got an LA Kings New York Rangers Stanley Cup final, you're going, oh boy, that's a market
NBC
dream.
NBC was salivating.
Right, like that's a market dream. Two biggest cities in the country. New
even
York
Chicago,
and LA.
Even Chicago was, Philly was a big one in 2010.
Sure it was. Exactly. It's not one of those. It's Dallas and Dallas is a modest market, like definitely a worthy sports town.
And with, then Tampa, you know, is a beach town.
Tampa's a Rays town. Well, Tampa's market's probably increasing because I think the Bucks are probably going to get a lot more play now that they've got Brady at quarterback.
Right. Yeah, you're right.
Like in terms of a sports aspect of it, but realistically, it's not exactly the place where a lot of the Lightning have probably been the most successful team down there for the better part of the last decade.
Overall, you're probably right. I mean, I don't think Tampa has any World Series in baseball.
No, the only time they actually made it to a World Series was 08 against the Phillies. Yeah. And then the Bucks only won the Super Bowl in 0, I guess it was the 02, like, I guess it was the 03.
Going through the Eagles.
Yep.
Just in case we had to bring that up.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Tampa Bay won their Stanley Cup by going through the Flyers, there was that. So Tampa's just not.
But you know what I like? That's
why
one
don't
of the
we have
that,
more of a rivalry with the city of Tampa Bay? Hold
I don't
on
know.
A second.
But that's one of the things I do like about this Cup final. By the way, is
non-traditional markets.
No, not that it's not traditional markets, but the fact, like what you just brought up. Tampa's an 0-4 Cup winner. Dallas is a 99 Cup winner. That's how far back you got to go.
Breaking
and drafts. I know it's not like it's not the same like crazy sufferable
it's not
drought.
75.
Or worse. Like there's teams out there that are worse. It's not Toronto. Right. It's not, you know, it's not what Chicago was in 2010.
Yeah, but we're a Flyers podcast. So 75 is the only number we care about.
No, I know, but I'm also trying to throw out other numbers that don't just so we don't feel so
no,
bad.
I know.
But nonetheless, like there have been droughts like that, and it's not
Vegas
a team like
has never even won one. What losers?
Okay, so how about that one? It's not St. Louis. It's not last year going for the first one ever.
Right. Has San Jose ever won one?
No, San Jose has never won one. But right. San Jose's only been in the league for since like 93.
Sure.
So it's not as long of a – like St. Louis was in the league in 67.
There are some droughts.
And didn't win a cup until 2019. So
– for sure.
Otherwise, you know, it's just one of those, like, I like when there's two teams that haven't won it for a little while that give you this, like, make
there's
you feel like
hunger.
You have a reason. Yeah. Well, but to make you feel like you have a reason to kind of not care who wins it to an extent. Like, I really honestly sit there and I go, I don't care who wins it because of the fact that like I mentioned from the beginning, the Dallas thing would be great because Dallas hasn't won one since 99 and I liked that team and things like that. Like that'd be cool.
You'll be happy for whichever fan base gets to celebrate.
But I also sit there and look at Tampa and I go, the number of players that they have, like Hedman deserves a cup.
They have a lot
Stamkos
of guys.
Really deserves a cup.
They have a lot of guys on the old guy without a cup list. You know, they're getting there. Stamkos isn't old yet, but he's getting there, right? He's starting to get to the point. This might be his last big shot.
This was, going back to the conversation we had about who would get it second?
Yeah. Let's circle back to that.
Here's the thing with Tampa. The guy who probably deserves to get it the most is the guy who would get it first. Stamkos is one of the oldest players on the team.
He can't pass it to himself.
Right. So he actually gets it, and you're going to feel like everybody's going to feel really good about that from the beginning. I mean, after that, it's probably, I guess, for a guy who's never won it before, it's probably Coburn.
Oh, you're right.
Coburn. Because the only other guy I can think of that from looking at the roster that I went, oh, yeah, you know what? You're a guy who probably would. It's Pat Maroon, and he won it last year. So it's not his first. So as soon as that's the case, I think that from a suffering standpoint, the only other guy who I think you might give credit to, and he would – obviously he gets credit for being part of the team. He's not going to play in a game, but it's Curtis McElhinney.
Yeah, they're not going to do that.
No, I know, but that's the next guy who's got the – veteran level that you go, you've been around for a little while. That's what I'm saying. So I think it would have to be Coburn.
I think when you've won, you're winning your first cup as a unit, right? When Jonathan Toews handed the cup off to Kimmo Tiimonen,
right?
They had just won a couple years before. They just had their celebration. They all got to do their thing. This was Kimmo's first cup. This is Stamkos' first cup. This is Hedman's first cup. This is Kucherov's first cup. I think they're getting it first. Regardless, maybe you go Coburn early, but I don't think you necessarily go for the sentimental, here's Curtis McElhinney.
No, I don't think you go with that per se. You do that. What you try to do is you try to look at their list and go, who has been around for a while that, even with that team that's been through some of that stuff. That's why I'm saying Stamkos is probably one of the easiest ones to go to.
And that moment will be the – he's getting his first cup moment.
I'll tell you who might get it now that I'm looking at the list, honestly.
Is it Bogosian?
No. Actually, a good one to go to would have been Ryan McDonagh.
Ooh. And he's been there for a couple of years now, right?
Yeah.
So he's got a little bit of longevity. He's in the room. They know he wants it. Yeah, that's not a bad one. Ryan McDonagh's not a bad call.
You know what? It's either going to be him or it's going to be another guy who I'm looking at who's – now that I'm looking at his whole career list – he's had near misses twice.
Okay.
On a cup. Shattenkirk.
Yeah.
Shattenkirk was in Washington the year before they won the cup. And then he was with St. Louis all those years and they finally just got theirs.
That's a good call too.
He's a guy who I think you sit there and you go, you know what? You've been a workhorse for us too.
But
you get it.
Between now and our next show, it's unlikely that Tampa will be the team that wins, right? If a team wins between now and next week, it'll probably be Dallas.
I can't see Tampa winning the next four in a row.
Right. So I'm saying if a team wins between now and our next show, it'll probably be Dallas. So who gets it after Ben for Dallas? Because I really think it's a question. Now, you got Pavelski there, but you also have Tyler Seguin right there. And I know Seguin has his cup, but you got Ben and Seguin, right? They're the duo.
I still think they look.
Gary Bettman hands Jamie Benn the Stanley Cup. Says, Jamie Benn, congratulations, you've won the Stanley Cup. Jamie Benn raises it. He turns and hands it to.
I still think it's Pavelski.
You think it's Pavelski? Okay. I think there's chance he goes.
I want to look at something really quick when it comes to that because I want to just go through it and whatever. And
I think there's a chance he tries to hand it to Seguin, and Seguin points at Joe Pavelski.
I mean, here's the thing about Pavelski, and I'm looking at – he's 36. I don't know if in an uncertainty kind of thing that you – I don't think he'd think about hanging him up per se, but, you never know if he finally wins.
If you win, he might.
I can't find anybody who I can actually say would really do that. You know,
if the Dallas Stars lose, there is no chance in hell that Joe Pavelski is retiring.
Oh, no, not they lose, but if they win.
But if they win the Stanley Cup, he might think about it. Not knowing when the next season starts – like you said, 36 years old, he's going to be taking a pay cut at this stage in his career. I don't know, man. Hanging him up as the Stanley Cup champion sounds pretty good.
Here's an interesting thought, because it's one thing we didn't get a chance to talk about yet, about Dallas.
Yeah.
Now Dallas was one of the few teams that had a player who chose to opt out of the bubble. and didn't play. If now, obviously, with the regular season, though, that player, Roman Polak, has enough experience that he would get his name on the cup anyway because he played a majority of the regular season with them, and that wouldn't change anything.
Right.
If you finally, eventually, because it's not going to happen day of, obviously, but if you get your day with the cup, do you decide to hang him up then, too, because of what you just decided to do?
Does... You know,
like that it wasn't a big enough situation, like the family was bigger than going to Edmonton.
So wait, is that how it works, that if you get your name on the cup, you get a day with the cup?
Oh, or, I think so, sure.
Or is it just if you're on the team? Like, he might get his, he'll get his name on the cup because he qualified, but he might not get a day with the cup because he wasn't there to win it.
I think it still bounces around to player you
think
by
he'll,
player.
You think he'll still get it, even though?
They work it out, yeah. And I don't doubt that because he played more than half of the year with them.
Oh, no, right. And that, he totally –
Well, they're going to find a way to get it
name,
to him.
Right. Even if his name wasn't going to be on the cup, he might be one of their flex spots or whatever. Like he would be on there because he was part of the team.
Right.
But I'm curious what the conditions are for quote day with the cup. You know, I don't know if there's anything official regarding.
It's
those
really
rules.
Interesting too, because there are guys who, and I'm pretty positive about this. There are guys who, when a team wins a Stanley Cup, go out there and lift it, and then didn't play enough to actually get their name on it.
Yeah, but you're still part of the organization, right?
Like, no. I'm not saying that there's not a reason that they didn't get, like, that they got to hold it. It's just that it gets passed around to guys who get to hold it and don't actually get their name on it. If he gets his name on it, he gets a chance to do whatever the hell he wants with it, I think.
I guess. Like, he would obviously get a ring because he's part of the organization.
Oh, yeah. And I'm just wondering how much that's in the minds of, like, everybody else. Like, here's a guy who chose this over playing, and there was no problem with it. Like, everybody said it was a supported decision.
Right, and nobody –
But it's a,
right.
Here we go. We're going to – like, we got a shot to win this thing. We're three games away from winning it.
Right.
Like, we're three games away from winning. If you're three games away from winning
– It's time to start thinking about it.
Well, not only that, but it's like you got to find a way to get this guy the chance to just hold the thing.
Right.
After the fact. Like, I know he's not going to be there, but it's like, after the fact, give him a chance to go and hold it.
Right. Have they said anything about families? Are families in
Some
going...
are, but...
Okay. Because I know there's...
I really don't know the details of it.
Because one of my favorite things about post-cup pomp and circumstance is families on the ice. You know, you see the kids with the headphones on and... You know, like
there are. Well, I don't even know if kids would even need the headphones.
Well, that's what I'm saying. But I'm saying it's part of the experience. They probably would, just because I'm sure the in arena music is still a billion decibels, because that's how arenas work. They might still need the headwear.
Nonetheless,
either way, I'm curious if we're going to get any level of that under these circumstances. Right? We've seen full blown handshakes.
Mm-hmm.
So the NHL has clearly trusted their bubble to that extent.
I think what people or what they're going to end up doing, what it came down to is that I don't know that any American families are allowed in. I just don't know if it's possible. Like, and a lot of others have done what they had to do. Like Gary Bettman's there, Bill Daly's there, and they're there because they went in, they did their little period of time where they tested continuously.
They got their four tests in 4 days,
you know, and whatever it is, four or five.
They entered the bubble, right?
And they entered the bubble, and they've chosen to do this, and they're going to be there, and you're going to get a normal Stanley Cup presentation. You're going to get a handshake. Here it is. Let's pose for a picture.
I hope they pipe in booze for when they announce Bettman.
Oh, that would be awesome.
I hope they pipe in booze. They've been piping in cheers all postseason, even when the visiting team scores a goal. I hope they pipe in booze literally just for Gary Bettman. That would make my life complete.
Are they pumping in booze when the visiting team scores? I think they're pumping in cheers no matter what, because they're
that's
playing.
That's what I'm saying. I'm saying they're pumping in cheers no matter what, even when the visiting team scores.
Oh, okay. So you're saying
I hope they
you're
pump in booze just for Gary Bettman.
You know, I mean, it would be really funny if they, you know what they need to do also, though, by the way, then in the same vein as what the NFL did when the draft happens, if Bettman's doing anything through Zoom or whatever it is, have that hashtag that goes around like boo the commish.
That's
which was for charity, by the way. So it was like a whole, like, it was a great way to do it. Like, it's a, you know, cause right. I even tweeted it cause I tweeted that and then went, come on, it's for a good cause.
You got to do it, right?
Like, you got to do it. Even if you like, honestly, I respect him right now more than I ever have because of what he's done to pull this off.
Gary Bettman's public approval is probably the highest it's been in at least 10 years.
But if you played that up and said, let's do a boo the commish thing, like, let's do that and do it for charity.
And you know what?
Everybody
I think he loves
it.
And I think
he embraces it. Sure he does.
Honestly,
it would be really funny if he came out there, had a microphone like he normally does to announce all the things, and came out there and said, Well, wow, this is a different feeling. It's the first time I haven't gotten booed doing this. Like, it's interesting doing it quietly.
If they don't pump in boos for him, I fully, fully, fully expect him to acknowledge it once he gets the microphone.
Yeah.
He has steered into it 100%. He is going full, yeah, not quite full-blown Vince McMahon, but pretty close in terms of being the big evil owner.
Yeah, it's pretty fun. It's pretty funny stuff.
But honestly, so, because he has steered into it and because the NHL has done such a phenomenal job with the bubbles, his approval rating is probably the highest it's been since before the lockout, the first lockout, the big lockout.
The big lockout. I mean, well, I don't think it was. I don't think his approval rating was very good after the second one either.
Well, no, but I'm saying I don't think it's been. I don't think it's been that high since the big one. Right. Period.
Yeah, and if it was rising, he brought it right back down when they missed a half season again. Right. Like, yeah, so
when they had another labor dispute.
Yeah, well, that's why I'm saying, like, that's why everything about this has been so outstanding.
I'm so grateful that they got this organized. Not only did they get this negotiated, they also got their CBA negotiated at the same time.
Well, so we have exactly. You played out the rest of this year in a pandemic by creating a bubble, and you got labor peace for the next 6 years. That's making some major accomplishments when the world was not active, you know, like at all.
In a world where no one knows what they're doing tomorrow, you got labor peace for 6 years.
Yeah, that's pretty good. I mean, it's really good. It's excellent.
And you got the Players Association to agree to a flat cap for 3 years.
Yeah.
You got them to agree that the cap wasn't going up for 3 full years and labor peace on top of it.
And I know
Gary, come on, bud, you're doing a great job.
Yeah. And I know he can't control the one thing that we all really want, which is full buildings again.
Escrow? I'm sorry.
He can't control when fans come back per se. Right. Like, they've got to listen on that. If they could even just construct a good schedule that starts and does it in a progression and get it, like, if we've heard various things, like we've heard December 1st, as the, that would be the ideal date to start. And then we've heard Gary Bettman say, we're not afraid to go late December, early January if we have to push it back because of whatever. And we've heard other things.
The NHL has been supremely flexible.
Well, sure, but we've heard other rumblings from executives. Like, there's stories that have sources from executives around the league that are going, we're all gonna take a hit, and this might not start until mid-January, early February.
Yep.
And the thought of that is not ideal, obviously. But see, that's what I'm saying. To me, if he pulls off something else that gets it started, like
even within at a time all
that,
earlier,
like we're gonna right. sit. Well, we're gonna sit here, and the idea of this was that realistically, you were gonna try to complete an entire offseason in 6 weeks. You're gonna get the year done at the end of September. Come right back after
what is very quick turnaround.
What is that going to be? A week after a week, and say, here's the draft, 2 days, and then here's free agency starting. Go.
Oh, by the way, get all your buyouts done because they have to be done before free agency because that's how the rules work.
Right.
Like, so you're going to be all that. There's going to be so much crammed in that week between the end of the Stanley Cup final and the beginning of free agency. Right. That week between September 30th and October 9th, which is when free agency opens, that 10 days or so.
Right.
Includes the entire NHL draft.
So get through all of that, have about a month off, and then by mid-November it was supposed to be training camps. Here we go, we're back, training camps. And realistically, to me, that's kind of the end of the offseason. Like, that's why when I summed up the end of the Flyer series, which ended on, what was it, September 5th was the end of the Flyer series, it was Game 7?
Something like that, yeah.
And the way I made a post about it, it was, look, this thing for me started with the first day of rookie camp that I'm showing up to watch rookies take do drills.
And
it was September 7th.
Okay.
And literally 1 year after that started, the season ended. Like, it's the craziest year we'll ever go through.
For
other teams, it was going to be longer, obviously. But here you go. Like, they were trying to get that started. And for me, like, that's what I'm saying. Like, that's activity. So, okay, there's training camp activity. So let's start with the training camp activity. And before we know it, there will be a season because that's the way it's got to be. You know, like, and
I'd be a little surprised if players are in camp before Christmas.
I don't know about before Christmas, not for camp. I'd be surprised if the season started before then.
Maybe before Thanksgiving. How about that? Because you think about it, the players just, you know, a lot of these players who were just in the playoffs just spent several weeks away from their family, blah, blah, blah. It's going to be hard to get guys in the door before Thanksgiving.
It's not that it's going to be hard to get guys in the door before then. It's going to be hard to get guys to do a bubble again, if that's what it takes.
If that's where they end up going.
If you can find a way to do this, and I think that there's possibly a way. Like, let's be real about this. If you can go through by the time mid-November hits, and maybe you don't have a schedule yet, you don't have a plan yet, but if you can go through by the time mid-November hits and at least financially understand what you have to do to make it happen, like to make it happen and not feel like you're losing too much or that, or maybe you're not taking as much of a loss because there's no fans, then if you can find a way to open up all 31 arenas and just have teams travel back and forth and do that and do it in as much of a bubble setting as you can in that respect.
Right. We've heard talk of a phases system.
Well, right.
Will be red, yellow, or green based on attendance.
And I'm not even worried about attendance, like in that sense. I'm just worried about if you can use everybody's own individual buildings, create a schedule that looks, because I don't see how there's a way to say you're going to blank city, and we're going to play as many games as we can in a given day. And we'll be here for the next year at that point, trying to figure out how you're going to play 82.
Right.
Like if you're doing it that way. If you can tell everybody, okay, you know, Pittsburgh, you're in Philadelphia tonight, and New Jersey, you're with playing the Rangers tonight, and Washington, you're going to Buffalo tonight or whatever, and you get to play in those home arenas, even if there's nobody there, the way that baseball has done and the way that football is trying to do, then I think that you can try to find a way to start it, and at least there's some form of normal, because yes, a road trip is still a road trip for all the other NHL players. You go away for a while, you're going to come home.
Right.
And it's not like you're going to sacrifice anything with your family because of the fact that you're going to keep getting tested.
Right.
So if you're going to keep getting tested, you're going to know what's going on, you know, throughout, and you're going to find out whether or not you have it.
We've seen that the NHL has the capability to test large numbers of players, right? They proved that successfully in the bubble. We talked about it right away. What was it, like 1,300 positive or negative tests, something like that, with zero positives?
And that's
we've shown that they can do that.
Yeah. So to me, that's going to have to be the way it's going to have to be done. Is if you
each team is basically going to have their own COVID squad, basically with their tester and their their compliance officer and whatever other positions are needed.
Yeah, probably.
And every team is probably going to have their own little COVID unit where your job is to test players and make sure players' results are good and make sure no one's going to clubs and et cetera, et cetera.
But that to me is the way that. And I don't even like, I don't like, it depends on how often you're going to test. Like, I don't feel like you need to necessarily tell players, don't go do this, don't go do that. Like, yes, don't go to clubs and don't go do things like that. But like,
don't be reckless.
I don't think you can also tell somebody you can't be the one to do the grocery shopping this week because, you know, like let's be real about that. You know, like I think you can let them live their normal lives to some extent, but also not overdo it where it's like, you know, like, or like not put them in danger. So this way you feel like you can pull it off and keep them getting tested regularly enough so that they can actually participate that way.
I could also easily see an agreement where as part of a return to play, one of the players association's conditions is that every player has, or every team has someone who will get groceries for players, who will allow players to quarantine as much as they'd like, or, you know, whatever the case may be. That might be part of the process, right? Like the team doesn't say, hey, you're not allowed to go to the grocery store. The player might say, hey, I'm not going to the grocery store. You're getting my groceries for me.
Right. And I mean, I still think there's a way to make this work because I don't feel like the NFL is telling their players, you can't go do anything.
Right. And I think they're just telling their players, hey, don't be an idiot.
Well, exactly. And I think that, let's this way. Am I really supposed to believe that every flyer didn't go and do something to entertain themselves? Like, no one went out to eat. I'm not saying that, but I also don't think that nobody went to, like,
you're telling me the guys weren't hanging out in somebody's backyard with wives and, you know, et cetera.
Not even that as much as it is like even down to, all right, you know what? You're in New Jersey. And if you're dating somebody or you're married to somebody who lives in that part of the area too,
you're going there.
Then go to the beach for a day. Like, what's the harm of doing that if you're like, if you stay away from people, just stay away from people.
Right. Yeah. I'm not necessarily sure if teams are going to have compliance officers and how strict things are going to be.
Right.
But I really don't know because we, like I said, we haven't really heard much. We've heard that the NHL is trying to do something similar to what baseball did. We've heard that they're kind of following the MLB model to some extent. And I don't think MLB players are getting that sort of guidance either, right? We heard some incidents early on where I believe the Royals went to a strip club. Oh, no, the Royals went to a casino.
Okay, yeah.
Somebody else went to a strip club. Another strip team, club one was the San Diego?
The strip club one was an NBA thing.
No, that was a whole different thing. An MLB team also went.
Did they also?
And got,
okay, see,
maybe that was how Miami got it originally.
I have no idea.
But either way.
No. You know what? Then I think you're right with what you're thinking of. I don't think it actually happened, though. I think it was a rumor that Miami had done that in Atlanta.
Maybe you're right.
It turned out to not be the case at all. Like, they didn't have outside contact with anybody particularly for that.
Right. But either way, there were some incidents early on where some teams were reckless. Regardless, Kansas City did go to a casino. That happened. They were on camera. That, you know.
Yeah.
but then after I think it took some positive cases for MLB players to go, oh, this is like a problem.
Yeah.
Oh, positive cases are bad. Oh, that's crazy. I don't know why it took them that long to figure it out. But I think they figured out that once people start testing positive, you put games and your season at risk. And I think people straightened up and, you know, flew tight at that point.
I think
something similar would happen in the NHL.
Yeah. I don't think we're as far away from knowing the plan as people think we are. Like, it feels like we're far away. Right. I think what you're going to see is that, like, right now the idea is, or not the idea, but the problem is that there's a maximum of 6 games left, a minimum of 5 or 3 games left at this point. You know, there's a minimum of 3 to 6 games left in the season.
And right
before
now,
the Stanley Cup is awarded.
The Stanley Cup's going to be awarded, and we don't know when the next season starts.
Well, and right now the focus is get through these next 3 to 6, whatever it is, award the Stanley Cup, and then within the next week, do the draft and free agency gets
figure
underway.
The rest
out. So off season is going. While the off season is going, I wouldn't be surprised if at that point, once the draft is over, because yes, like Gary Bettman has involvement in that type of stuff too.
Right.
Once the draft is over, then you'll start to see it pick up with, you know, more talks about what they're going to try to do and if they're going to get into a phased program. And basically, I think the only question in my mind is if it works from a financial standpoint.
Right.
Like that, I think, is the biggest question.
Right.
Otherwise, I don't think there's really much to work out here. Like, you can go back and try to do the bubble thing again if you can find a way to strategically do it and know it will work because it's already worked so far. You may be able to watch the other leagues. You may be able to watch the Major League Baseball. You may be able to watch the NFL and say, okay, you proved that you could go bounce around from arena to arena and keep your teams isolated by themselves after testing properly. And it may work that way. So if it works that way, we might be able to play that way and at least get the games in. But that's what it's going to take.
Is there any merit in adopting, for lack of a better term, like an AHL style scheduling where you play 3 games in 4 days or 3 games in 3 days sometimes, and maybe your schedule is set up where, you know, you'll play Thursday, Friday, Sunday, Monday. No, you know, you play 4 games and almost enter a little mini bubble every week. You know what I'm saying? And then you have a couple days at home where you're not playing and can kind of spend time with your family and not have to worry about it.
I worry about how long that's going to take to keep to add in the part that you're talking about.
Okay.
The time home in addition. Like, I think if you put teams
at that point, it's not a bubble, right? Because you're not locking everyone down and doing the blah, blah, blah. But it's just kind of a safety measure where you're kind of taking a half step.
Yeah, no, I know what you're saying. It seems still too complicated at least for my liking.
Well, you just treat them as road trips, right? You know?
Well, I think you've got to look at it from a standpoint of like just trying to see which teams have gone through this already, which teams maybe struggled with it. Like obviously there were enough players who felt like this is not as fun as it was.
We've heard about the Washington Capitals and the stories that have come out of there where they were throwing pool parties and no one was necessarily taking the hockey all that seriously.
Oh, see, I'm not saying that part of it. I'm talking more about like Boston and Tuukka Rask kind of stuff where it's something comes up. What are you supposed to do about that person? Like, it's not as simple as just miss practice and miss a game and come back the next day because you're still always here. It's
right.
You don't want to travel to somewhere else and have to say even for a week or two, this is where I call home for the next week or two. And I don't, then I finally get to go. And the idea of picturing it over longer weekends though.
Yeah. I get what you're saying.
Like, I think if you're going to do something like that, then I still think that at that point in time, the easier thing to do is sit there and send a team and say, maybe the easier thing to do at that point is to send, like, okay, you're doing your California road trip this weekend. So you're flying out, you're going to stay in the same hotel, and we're going to get you to like, we'll bus you to San Jose for that day. Right. And you're in the area where Anaheim and LA are not that far apart anyway.
And I think there's going to be a lot of that. I think there's going to be a lot of condensed road trips where the Flyers don't go out west twice and play Winnipeg, Edmonton, Vegas once, and then come back and play Anaheim, San Jose, Arizona later.
If
I think they're just going to take longer road trips and just play all of them.
Yeah, well, yeah, if that even is a thing, you know, I mean, the NHL used to play 82 games where you maybe saw a team once every year.
I was about to say, in case some of our listeners don't know, the NHL schedule for the last couple of years has been pretty consistent. You play teams in your division 5 or 6 times, depending on the number. And then you play the other teams in your conference 3 times. And then you play the teams in the other conference twice, once at home and once in their building.
It's actually less than that with the divisions now, because what it used to be, it used to be 5 or 6.
Oh, it's down to 4 or 5.
It's 4 or 5 because now they wanted to make sure that you played every Western Conference team twice.
Right.
And that's where they changed it. So they left.
And I love that, by the way.
I like seeing every team.
Right. It allows fans to live in cities that aren't necessarily their teams. And you know you're going to get to see your team every year.
Yeah.
If, for example, I moved to San Jose, I would know that every year the Flyers are going to come play one game in San Jose.
Well, and you know what? Not only that, but from what I do too, like, it's always good to know that no matter what. And like, sometimes this year we got robbed of a couple of them. But like, it's cool to know that no matter what happens, blank player is coming to play a game in Philadelphia.
Exactly.
Like you're always guaranteed.
We know we're going to see Connor McDavid.
Right. And well, this year we didn't, unfortunately.
Well,
theoretically. And we were all looking forward to it.
The first time we saw him, he didn't get to see many other people that year. So maybe he shouldn't come to Philly very often.
Well, that's beside the point.
Yeah, it's all Brandon Manning's fault. It's fine. Flyers legend Brandon Manning.
Flyers legend,
you know, suspended in the minors for a racial slur, that Brandon Manning.
Yeah.
Either way, circling all the way back here, Stanley Cup Finals.
Mm-hmm.
We are through game one. Dallas is up 1-0. Not asking your pre-series prediction now. Now that Dallas is up 1-0, mm-hmm. who wins the series?
Okay, I had two theories. My pre-series prediction was Tampa and 7.
Tampa and 7, right.
No, and after game one, I still feel pretty good about that, to be honest.
Like, I think that's fair.
Well, because here's the thing, too. Tampa did have to play more of a series than Dallas did to get there.
Yeah.
So those extra games can and let's be real about that, too. You know, Dallas got done with their game 5 on Monday. And then game 5 of Tampa and the Islanders was Tuesday. It needs to go on. Then they're going to play Thursday. And then you're going to tell them, oh, wait, you know, guess what?
Game 1 of the Stanley Cup Final was supposed to be Thursday. And it ended up getting, because the Islanders won game 5, game 1 of the Stanley Cup Final ended up not being played until Saturday. So instead of winning game 5 Monday and thinking you're going to start the Stanley Cup Final on Thursday – you know,
we always knew that no matter what, game 1 of the Stanley Cup Final was going to be 2 days after whenever the last series ended, no matter what.
Right.
And the idea, well, and the only difference would have been is that if it would have ended on not Thursday, but
Friday, they didn't
well,
want
no, not
a
Friday.
Sunday game.
Like, well, no, they didn't want a Sunday game. That's exactly
right. So
the point.
If the series ended Friday, it wouldn't have been Sunday.
Well, I wonder if it would have been like dependent on how long a game 6 would have gone, like on Thursday, like if it would have drug into the morning hours a little bit because you're already there.
Right.
Like then maybe it turns into a, you know, we can't play until Monday kind of deal, but they do want to move it along really quickly. So I wasn't surprised, but the bottom line being that Dallas was going to be the fresher team that didn't play for a little while. And Tampa had just played two pretty, you know, two overtime games can be grueling. Understood, you know, unless it was like Cirelli scored the game winning goal in that game for Tampa and had a awkward collision with Anders Lee earlier in the game too. So like you're beat up a little, let's face it.
For sure.
If
and
Dallas,
you're 4 rounds deep in the playoffs, you're probably just beat up in general.
If Dallas is going to win this series, I think it's going to be like, I think it would end up being Dallas in 6, which makes me like what happened in game 1. Like Dallas getting the edge in game 1 and then needing to win 3 of 5 sounds realistic to me.
For sure.
I don't think it's going to quite be the game 6 that it was in 1999.
Right. When's the last time Tampa won 3 out of 5 or lost 3 out of 5?
Yeah. I mean, you have to go all the way back to
that 2-2-1 stretch we were talking about
earlier. Yeah, pretty much. I mean, that's probably it, you know? Well, even the other thing that I had mentioned before was, or I don't think I mentioned it on last week's show because we didn't have it that far in. Like, it wasn't something that was brought up until after Tampa had actually won the series against the Islanders, I don't think. But that their most lopsided loss, I think it was because we texted it. That was, it was in the group text we talked about.
Their most lopsided loss. Their loss previous
was the Flyers loss.
Yep.
Up until last night when they lose by the same score, 4-1.
The same score, right.
But, like, to think that the team hasn't gone through anything like that, you know, they're not even losing games badly.
Right.
Like, they're losing overtime games, probably, if anything, like, or whatever.
There's a lot of one-goal games. Well, think about who they played. You know, the Islanders aren't exactly putting up four spots on many people.
Yeah, the Islanders are going to give you a lot of 2-1 games, apparently.
Exactly. 3-1.
3-2, whatever.
Right.
But, like, I think if Dallas has any shot to win this series or is wants to win this series, you best do it by 6.
Yeah.
You know, and I could see it. Like, I honestly almost thought, like, in my head, if I was going to pick one side or the other, like, Tampa's going to be able to do this in any duration to me. Like, if it goes 7, it's going to be Tampa. And I do think it's going to be a long series. But I could see Tampa in 6. Like, I'm not going to deny that. But if it's going to be, like, for me, it's going to be Dallas. Like, if it's going to be Dallas, it's Dallas in 6. And there is no doubting it. And I actually, like, now that they've won game 1, I think destiny is, like, just prevailing slightly here right now. So the thing I'm willing to guarantee with you right now on here is that we will do another show before this final is over.
Okay. I think that is very, very likely.
Like, I think that there's 4 more games on the schedule.
We will record
before the next show.
We will record our next show after game 5.
Right. So I think there's going to be a game 6 on Monday night for sure.
And I think that
there's a very good possibility there could be a game 7 on the following Wednesday too.
I think that's supremely likely. I think it depends on who's up 3-2. I think if Tampa's up 3-2, I think they close it out.
Mm-hmm.
If Dallas is up 3-2, I think we might have a game 7.
If Dallas is up 3-2, though, I think they better close it out if they want to win the cup. That's the thing.
I don't know, man. I kind of want to see game 7 for the Stanley Cup.
I mean, is there a – I would love to see game 7 for the Stanley Cup. I mean, I loved it last year too. And quite frankly, here's the thing. We're sitting here talking about that, and I'm sitting here saying, oh, Dallas – like, because Boston was probably the team last year that everybody really thought was going to win it.
Right.
You know, pre-series anyway. And – it took, you know, when St. Louis didn't win it.
St. Louis was that destiny team.
But when St. Louis didn't win it in 6, didn't everybody think Boston had it in their back pocket at that point?
Yeah,
in time?
Especially if it's going to Boston.
Like, if it's 3-2 and Dallas doesn't win game 6, just because they don't win game 6 does not mean they can't win it in 7.
Right.
You know, like, I don't think
it's also a different circumstance. Last year, the Blues lost game 6 in St. Louis and then had to go to Boston for game 7.
Sure.
It's a little bit of a different animal when you this entrance in Rogers Place to that entrance in Rogers Place. It's a little different.
Yeah, I guess. I guess so. But I do think we're in for a long one, no question about it. Like, you know,
especially when they play the enemy goal horn. I'm still annoyed about that. When Dallas is the home team and Tampa scores, you should not play Tampa's goal music. What are you doing? But no. that's my biggest issue with the bubble. You know how earlier we said they did a great job and they've done, you know, blah, 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 Gary Bettman, blah, blah, blah. Nah, I take it all back. Stop playing enemy goal songs.
I've gotten used to it at this point. It doesn't really affect me one way or the other. I'm more worried about whether or not someone scores a goal or not.
Oh, it would have bothered you a lot more if the Flyers had to play Chicago at any point and you had to hear Chelsea Dagger 6 times a game.
Well, I mean, that Chicago-Edmonton series was nothing but high scoring all the time.
I know.
So, like, you know.
I had awful flashbacks to 2010 hearing Chelsea
Dagger. You have to hear that one a little bit too much, right?
Oh, I hate that song. Honestly, I can't name anything else the Fratellis have ever done in their entire career, but right. I dislike them because they did that song.
Right.
All right. So we have determined that you and I disagree about who's going to win. So you think Tampa's going to win. You think the first cup pass goes to...
I changed my mind after this because I had said Brayden Coburn the whole way. I think it goes to Kevin Shattenkirk.
You think it goes to Kevin Shattenkirk? Okay, not McDonough?
I mean, it's 1A, 1B
one
at
two.
Point
okay.
in time. Like, it's really like, take your pick of both of them. But like,
and I think after the Dallas Stars win, Jamie Benn will hand it off to Tyler Seguin. And we talked about that.
And Tyler Seguin's going to point to Joe Pavelski and say, get over here, pass.
And I think there's a real chance that happens. I think Ben goes to hand it to Seguin, and Seguin backs off it and pulls Pavelski up.
They might just grab him, to be honest.
And I think
they might just
moment,
grab him and say, it's your turn, go.
I don't know about you. I cried when Ray Bourque got his cup. I cried when Kimmo Tiimonen got his cup. I sure
and
did.
When Kimmo Tiimonen got, we were all excited. And here's the thing, Kimmo Tiimonen, like, guys like that brush off the moment a little bit. Like, they really don't want it to be about themselves, but everybody else wants it at that moment. Yeah. Like, I always love that, like,
Hearing Jonathan Taves yell, "Kimmo, get over here. Yeah.
Come on, Kimmo, come get it."
Yeah.
And like, Taves that year was really, it was extra special because of the fact that you actually heard him say it over the live mics.
Screaming.
Well, no, not just that, like with the live mics, but I'm saying like when Bork got it, they did the same thing, but you couldn't hear it as much. Right. Taves is telling
her, Raymond Bork.
Well, no, because Tiimonen's got it and he's just happy about it and all stuff like that.
And he goes to hand it back to the team.
And Taves turns around and has to pat him on the back and go, "Come on, go for a skate.
Skate it. Go.
Like, come on, go for a skate." Like, and like, I love that stuff.
Was it
like,
Taves who went up to him or was it Kane? I thought Kane went up to him and said, "Hey, take
it." A lot of them were yelling it, but Taves like patted him on like the chest. Oh, okay. Come on, Kimmo, let's go for a skate.
I think Duncan Keith was yelling at him too.
I mean, well, and any of the guys who would want it, like you mentioned, like you said it that way, anybody who's won it before, yeah, like
they know how special that moment is. Right. I don't know if I'm going to be that emotional if Pavelski gets his cup.
No, like, I don't think there's
I love that moment, right? I love that I have the cup. Okay, let me go find the guy who really, you, boom, here it is. You enjoy this moment. I love that. That might be my favorite single thing about hockey culture. That moment right there.
You know what's really interesting about some of these teams too right now that I just kind of thought of is, looking back on both of the teams have won a cup in both these franchises' histories. Right. The 04 Lightning, the 99 Stars.
Yep.
There were clear-cut Hall of Famers on both teams.
And there are clear-cut Hall of Famers on both teams now.
You think so?
Yeah.
Like, who do you have for each one?
Dallas. Jamie Benn's probably a Hall of Famer. If they win, Benn's definitely a Hall of Famer.
It's a tough call for me, though, because I don't know if he's got the offensive numbers. Like, it's a really tough call.
If they win, I think he's there as the best power forward of the 2010s.
He might be. I mean, he's an underrated player. I'm not saying that he's not, but like...
I think Tyler Seguin is very likely a Hall of Famer.
Jamie Benn comes into the discussion like Claude Giroux comes into the discussion. Like, are they Hall of Famers? And I sit there and I go, I don't know. I mean,
if Claude Giroux has a ring, that conversation.
Maybe that's all it takes. I mean, Sagan's got a bit of a better argument. I'm not going to deny that.
Okay, Sagan. And then obviously it's far too early to tell on guys like Heiskanen and Esa Lindell and even
Gurianov,
and obviously, you know, prolific goal scorer. Like, obviously, it's hard to tell. And then on the other side, Tampa. Stamkos with a ring.
Yes, yeah, Stamkos getting a ring would probably get one. Kucherov with a ring
probably gets him in that conversation. Hedman with a ring probably gets him in that conversation.
Andrei Vasilevsky
is 25 years old, and if he gets a ring this year, he's in the conversation.
Tampa's too young for it, probably. Like, I don't think Tampa's got a guy like in the immediate that you sit there and you go, like, Stamkos is the closest thing Victor to a guy Hedman. They have that you go, he's already in the discussion, and a ring would just further validate it.
Does Hedman have a Norris?
Yeah.
Okay. Then I think Hedman's there too. A ring puts him there too.
And Hedman gets nominated every year almost anymore. Like, it's pretty
right.
It's pretty apparent that he's in this discussion. He's one of the best defensemen in the league.
As he well deserves. Right. I think you have a clear two on each team with Benn and Sagan.
Yep.
And Stamkos and Hedman.
Okay.
I think Kucherov is probably a future Hall of Famer if he follows his trajectory, 140 points a year or whatever he's doing.
Exactly.
He's like got a league MVP.
Even Kucherov is too early to tell.
Right. But I think he's on that track.
Yeah.
In Dallas, again, you have guys like Heiskanen and Esa Lindell and Roope Hintz and Gurianov and
there's a lot of guys who've got careers right in front of them right now. Yeah.
If Pavelski gets a ring, is he a Hall of Famer?
That was the guy I was kind of thinking of because like I'm sitting there going like,
because I haven't,
there are guys. Right, like that. That was more the guy I was thinking of. Like, is there a guy who
Roman
know
Polak is one ring away from being a Hall of Famer?
Yeah, no, I don't know about that. But there are guys like that. I don't know. Is Corey Perry even in that discussion to an extent?
I forgot Corey Perry.
Because this would be Corey Perry's second ring.
Wow, Corey Perry.
Like Pavelski, I think has a good shot if he gets a ring.
How many rats are in the Hall of Fame? And that's a real question. How many guys like, for example, Matthew Barnaby, Brad Marchand?
Marchand probably actually has a case though. That's the scary part.
Darius Kasparaitis. How many of those guys ended up making it into the Hall? Like, is Sean Avery in the Hall?
No, he's not.
Do you think he deserves to be in the Hall just for his persona?
No, I don't think so.
How many guys have had rules changed because of them?
Well, that's a fair point.
He is at minimum historically significant to the NHL. You know, the stand in front of the goalie rule. That's a Sean Avery classic.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know of a lot of guys who rack up the penalty minutes who get
well,
into
right.
the Hall
so
of
that's
fame.
That's what I'm asking. And
But see, at least Perry was skilled though too. Like, see, like Perry's right. skilled the way Marchand's skilled. Like Marchand scores a lot of goals, puts
well,
a lot
I don't
of
know.
Goals.
I don't know about quite the way Marchand's going. Marchand is very good.
Yeah, well, and that's what I'm saying. Like, if you're a guy who scores a lot of goals and puts up a lot of points, then you're in the discussion for that more than you are for being a rat, you know?
Sure, but I think Corey Perry's reputation is – if you ask a hockey fan about a Corey Perry story, mm-hmm. they're more likely to tell you about the time he got ejected from the Winter Classic than about any goals he scored.
Yeah, probably. All right. Fair enough.
You know, and I'm not saying he doesn't deserve – recognition as a point producing offensive player because he was for a long
right.
number of years in Anaheim with Ryan Getzlaf. And again, they got a Stanley Cup. So he has mm-hmm. won.
That's more of where I was thinking of it too.
Does the second
already got
cup
one.
Get Corey Perry into the Hall of Fame?
It might. I mean,
I think
really
there's a real possibility.
But Pavelski was more the guy I was thinking of. Like, I'm not thinking of guys who down the road were going to sit there and say, oh, you know what, you're – because Tampa's window doesn't close necessarily because of this year.
Absolutely
like,
not.
Like,
Sagan
with,
is 32,
with Kucherov and
– Ben is 33. Like, they got time.
Right. Well, and Tampa Bay's window definitely doesn't close. You
oh,
know?
Definitely
like, I
not,
mean,
no.
Like, they got enough young guys, and some of them just continue to show up, too. Like, they're going to get there down the – you know, somewhere down the road, too. Like, they got guys who are coming, too, I'm sure. And
if Tampa wins without Steven Stamkos playing –
Yeah, that would be outrageous at that point.
Their window is very much still open because Steven Stamkos will
didn't even play, and is probably their most veteran forward. That's even scary. Like, I mean, nothing. Like, I know Pat Maroon is more veteran forward than that, but like, they're guys who you bring in throughout the year that you want to have in there. Like I even said, like when Braden Point didn't play in the one game against the Islanders and eventually came back for a moment. Carter Verhaeghe, he scored a goal, and I even said even his understudy is scoring goals. Like, this is yep. ridiculous. Even his understudy is
like
able
I'm saying,
to score.
If Tampa wins without Stamkos,
yeah,
I might put money on Tampa to repeat because Stamkos is going to be motivated.
He will be. I just wonder. Like, I feel like that. I also feel like the hangover could hit them. I know you can't do much, but I feel like it could hit them in a weird way.
I don't know, man. Especially if it's only a 6-week off season, like we talked about. Well, either way, the Dallas Stars have a chance theoretically to win.
Oh,
the Stanley
they have
Cup
an absolute
IR
chance
week.
Now. They're up. Yeah.
Neither of us necessarily think it's going to happen before our next show. So
if it does,
case,
we'll be surprised. So
we will be surprised, and if that is the case, then we will do a season wrap up next week. Otherwise, we will be previewing Game 6 and potentially Game 7, as well as going over what has happened so far in the series. You can follow us on Twitter for our thoughts kind of as we go. It's usually producer Mike tweeting over there. We are at YWT Podcast. Don't forget to follow Kevin at Kevin_Durso, as well as our Sports Talk Philly partners over there at Sports Talk PHL, at Flyerdelphia, and then, you know, at Philadelphia and at Eagledelphia if they get unbanned. But you can also find the podcast on sportstalkphilly.com. Kevin puts out all his articles over there, and our podcast mm-hmm. can be found in those articles. Kevin, before we get out of here, is there anything else you wanted to say? We got a lot done today.
Yeah, we did get a lot done, and just ready to enjoy more of the Stanley Cup Final when we get back underway on Monday, and you know who knows where we'll be at in a week.
Yeah, and Nicholas Obey-Cabela is a Flyer for 2 more years. That's it.
That's we did talk about it at the beginning.
Yeah, that's kind of our most significant Flyer story this week, but a whole lot of Stanley Cup talk. And you can tune in next week for even more of it. Our shows come out about Sunday night at 8 o'clock. You can find them everywhere, iTunes, Spotify, Amazon Podcasts, apparently. And until then, see you guys next time.